Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza. This program is recorded via remote, and here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. South Sudan government extends its lockdown.
I was operating in saloon. I have enough customers. Starting this month, I didn't have customers, no money these days. I was broke. Even I don't know what to do with my family.
And COVID-19 suspected cases escape from a quarantine center in Nairobi.
Curfew is a mechanism of containment for this virus. And so again, we do request Kenyans to adhere to these restrictions and to obey the rules.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan government's high-level task force for COVID-19 has extended restrictions aimed at preventing the spread of the coronavirus indefinitely. The task force says the decision to extend the measures is aimed at arresting the spread of the disease. Some residents of Juba Town say any prolonged shutdown is not necessary. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan's partial lockdown was expected to end on April 20th. Many people here in Juba thought life would return to normal this week with a reopening of shops, bars, restaurants, and restrictions on public transport being lifted. But after Tuesday night's meeting, the COVID-19 task force decided to extend the partial shutdown until further notice. In a statement seen by South Sudan in Focus, the high-level task force said it was extending President Kiir's earlier directives, including banning all social gatherings, sports and political events, and religious services. It also agreed to postpone indefinitely all international conferences scheduled to take place in South Sudan and ban all non-essential travel. 22-year-old Juba resident and single mother Nancy Kiden, who runs a saloon business in Juba's Jebel neighborhood, says she will find it difficult to make ends meet now that the partial shutdown has been extended.
Since I completed my training in 2017, I was working in a saloon in Uganda. I came to Juba. I was operating in saloon. I have enough customers. Starting this month, I didn't have customers, no money these days. I was broke. Even I don't know what to do with my family.
Kiden says women in particular are struggling to feed their families.
I wish the corona will disappear away this next month so that I convert my business, okay? In a day, I will get something like 8,000. Now from there, I will save another and I'll eat from there. Now it is worse because not customers, I was just staying at home.
One female bar attendant at Juba's Jebel Market, who prefers to be identified only as Stella for fear of government reprisal, says bar owners continue to operate with their doors closed. She says whenever security operatives confront the bar owners and operators, they pay a bribe so they can be allowed to continue to operate. Juba resident Samuel Kenyi says the partial lockdown should only be limited to the borders, but people should be allowed to go to church.
Because our country up to now, we still have 4 cases. And these 4 cases, to me, even most of these people who are affected, I think they are foreigners. Only maybe from Malaysia, only one person. But the rest, I think these are foreigners. What the government is supposed to do, they're supposed to close all the borders. No movement. And for us, even within here, now we are going, we are doing activities, even at the homes, still some places are open, like banks are open, and even when we see, pharmacies are open, and even some of the shops, I think, and they are open, people are doing businesses, just in a way that even the government could not realize that they are doing this. And if now people are going, and also people are doing their normal services, businesses and the other, why then should they close the church?
Akuch Ajang, the chairperson of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, says people are asking questions about the restrictions.
We have appealed to the government also to look to a situation where small business will not be affording now to bring the food on the table. Some may be closed, some shop, for innocent. Those who have salons, for haircuts. They are not working anymore now. How are they going to survive? These are issues that we are sharing with the task force, with the government, with the Kenyan community to support.
Ajang says telling people to stay at home when they have no alternative source of income can be very stressful. Ajang is calling on the government to provide humanitarian assistance to vulnerable Juba residents. South Sudan has 4 confirmed cases of COVID-19 and has quarantined more than 100 people who came into contact with the 4 confirmed cases. Less than 100 people have been tested nationwide. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio, Juba.
The Kenyan government is looking for at least 50 Kenyans who sneaked out of a corona quarantine center. They arrived in the country from overseas and were put under mandatory quarantine as part of government's rules to combat COVID-19. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, many of Kenyans under quarantine are complaining about the poor state of the centers.
The number of COVID-positive patients in Kenya is now at 296, increasing at a high rate as most Kenyans ignore the fact that COVID-19 is a deadly virus. As it looks, things are falling apart for the government as Kenyans contravene rules set in combating coronavirus. Chief Administrative Secretary, Minister of Health, Mercy Mwangangi, said that those who defy the quarantine rules and run away will be traced by police and face the law.
Curfew is not there because it's trying to punish Kenyans, but curfew is a mechanism of containment for this virus. And so again, we do request Kenyans to adhere to these restrictions and to obey the rules. Indeed, we've received reports from KMTC, and we've activated channels through the Ministry of Interior who are following up on this issue, and we'll be able to update you once all the information is collected and the investigations are undertaken.
Most Kenyans have been flouting the curfew of not being out of the house from 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. as per the government directive, a move that has pushed the government to undertake strict measures to have those going against the rule put under forced quarantine at their own cost. Nairobi County Commissioner Wilson Jenga said that forced quarantine is the only way to have Kenyans follow rules.
Following the directive by the CS for Health that anybody found contravening the curfew and gathering will be taken to have interacted with the people who have been infected and they stand at risk of spreading this virus. From the time that directive was given over the weekend, the police have been able to arrest 506 people who are currently under quarantine. So that is the requirement. You are found gathering in a bar having a party, then you'll be quarantined. After the quarantine of 14 days at your own cost, you'll be arraigned in court.
The Kenyan government has allowed truck drivers who have been identified as essential service providers to continue working. However, it has emerged that most of them are interacting with other people freely. Yesterday, Tuesday, police arrested 24 sex workers along with 6 of their clients who are believed to be truck drivers transporting goods from Mombasa to Uganda. Nairobi Police Commander Philip Ndolo said that the arrest will continue and culprits charged under Health Act.
We have now enhanced. We have people who are now doing patrol on those other sites because the notorious culprits here, what about us? Let us not play tricks because the tricks that we are playing are not going to make us finish the disease that we want to kill, the coronavirus, because we don't know your status as you are crossing to the other side.
Earlier, the commercial sex workers had demonstrated asking the government to include them on the list of essential service providers in the country, claiming that the nature of their job cannot be delivered by working from home. As it stands, Kenya will have to struggle with the defiance of its citizens who are going against government set rules to combat COVID-19 before winning the war against the virus. Reporting for viewers, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Still on COVID-19, nurses in Malawi's public hospitals are staging sit-ins to demand protective gears as well as increased hazard pay due to COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus. The government on Monday announced a 200% pay increase and promised to give them personal protective equipment this week. But the health workers say the pay increase should be permanent, not tied to the coronavirus. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
The strike, which started Friday, has crippled the country's health system. Patients in state hospitals have been discharged, except those who are seriously ill. Most would-be patients, including expectant mothers, are being turned away. Nelia Galanda, who is 9 months pregnant, was among many turned away Tuesday from Kamuzu Central Hospital in the capital, Lilongwe. She spoke to VOA by telephone. Galanda says, "I am too poor to go to a private hospital." She says, "Should the strike continue, I will just go to my village and seek assistance from the traditional birth attendants," although the government discourages this. Healthcare workers say they began the sit-ins because the government has not addressed grievances related to the ongoing COVID-19 crisis. Charles Smeza is the president of the National Organization of Nurses and Midwives of Malawi. He says medical staff must have the proper gear to work in hospitals at this time.
You will agree with me that this time we define everybody as a suspect up until he she is tested the other way. So we said that can we have personal protective equipment to keep ourselves safe, but also safety of the public.
In a memo Monday to health workers, the government announced a risk allowance of about 200% to stop the strike. Smeza, however, says the nurses are unhappy with the conditions attached.
Because, the conclusion of the circular is indicating that this allowance is only for the time of COVID-19. So we are saying health workers have been exposed to heavy risks, and we've always lived by God's grace. That's what we've said many times. So we are saying, why should it be for only, the COVID time?
On Monday, Health Minister Jap Mhango acknowledged the shortage of the medical supplies, including PPEs, and said efforts are underway to procure more.
Government, together with its partners, are working on adopting some innovations from the academia and local industry to manufacture personal protective equipment. Already, Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital has procured 3,000 face shields from the Polytechnic. Other companies are also exploring the possibility of producing other protected garments and equipment.
Government officials and leaders of the Nurses Association were due to meet late Tuesday in an effort to end the sit-ins. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, what is the economic impact of the corona pandemic? Stay tuned for an answer to that question right after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
When you make a mistake, do you admit it or just move on and try not to do it again?
When I realize that I've done something wrong, but of course I have to make sure that I make a correction out of what I have done. Because sometimes there are things we do them and afterwards you learn from them as such.
It depends on the mistake, but most of the time I tend to realize my mistakes. And where it is necessary, I apologize. Why should I keep on moving when I've made a mistake? I've made a mistake, I have to apologize.
When I've done something wrong, I do admit. At the same time, I choose to move forward with my life.
Well, it is hard to admit mistakes. So, yeah, usually the first option is to move on and try not to do it again. I think that's my first go-to option.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the the Voice of America. A new report warns more than 250 million people around the world could face acute hunger because of the economic impact of the COVID-19 pandemic. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva on the 2020 Global Report on Food Crisis produced by the World Food Programme, Food and Agriculture Organization, and other 14 agencies.
Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, the report said 135 million people around the world were suffering from severe hunger. But authors of the report warn the pandemic will more than double that number by the end of the year if swift, vigorous action is not taken. The report cites the main drivers of world hunger as conflict, climate change, and economic crises. It says Africa is the worst affected continent in the world, followed by Asia and Latin America. It adds the majority of people suffering acute food insecurity, some 77%, are in countries of conflict. World Food Program Chief Economist Arif Hussein tells VOA people in countries such as Yemen, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Afghanistan, Syria, and South Sudan run the greatest risks.
If we don't get to them, their lives already hang by a thread. So if we don't get to them, they will pay the ultimate price. And every given day, in normal times, there are about 21,000 people who lose their lives to hunger. Every given day, not COVID, every given day. A child dies every 10 seconds because of malnutrition.
Hussein says quick action must be taken to assist people and those in other countries at risk. He says trade and supply chains must act, and food and other necessary supplies must be pre-positioned. He says aid agencies can and must help governments that have safety nets and protection plans scale up those programs.
We should not forget about the agricultural sector. Imagine, okay, fine, we have good stocks right now, but if the supply chain stops to work and seeds and fertilizer and other things are not getting to farmers, or farmers cannot go to the field, what will happen next year? Next year we will actually have a shortage of food. And that is something we must avoid.
UN aid agencies anticipate they will need between $10 and $12 billion this year to tackle the expected food crisis. But they say they need $1.9 billion immediately to make sure enough food is in place to assist people over the next 3 months, especially those who are trapped in war zones. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Authorities in Jonglei State say armed youth suspected of crossing from the Greater Pibor Administrative Area killed people, abducted children, and stole cattle earlier this week. A police official says the attackers have gone into hiding in nearby forests. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Jonglei State Police Commissioner Major General Joseph Mayenakon says at least 8 people were killed, 2 children were abducted, and hundreds of head of cattle were stolen in separate attacks that began last weekend in various Jonglei villages.
2 girls, she said, were abducted, then 1 person was killed immediately. That day, another incident in which one of the traders from Patai was also killed. Also, in the western Wangule, 3 people were killed, including the old man. The old man was stabbed with a knife. Then again, we lost one of youth in the area of Tabaidi. Especially before yesterday, these people came and raided cattle around Bo Town. Then in the raiding, 2 people were killed. Again, raiding is continuing these days within the vicinity of Venano Panyagor. Cows were taken, about 80 cows, yesterday evening by Murle criminals.
Mayan says the girl's mother saw the attackers and spoke to them in the Murle dialect. He says the attackers are still hiding in nearby forests and bushes, sending local villagers into a panic.
They are hovering around. They are hovering around. And this is what they said. Even we heard some statements that are saying that these criminals, they say, those the citizens of Bor around, they will not cultivate this year. This is what they are saying. they are saying they will chase away everybody who will cultivate in this area.
Akon admits Jonglei police have done little to protect the lives and property of residents, saying officers lack the vehicles and ammunition they need to pursue armed cattle raiders and other criminals. Jonglei State Acting Administrator Mabura Tim Mabur warns that unless Greater Pibor Administrative Area leaders prevent their youth from carrying out attacks on neighboring communities in Jonglei, youth in neighboring communities may retaliate.
We have been in a conversation with my counterpart to talk to his boys so that they don't cross to my territory. And this is my message that has been going on.
In February, Greater Pibor Administrative Area authorities said armed youth from Jonglei State killed at least 40 people, raided thousands of head of cattle and abducted more than 30 women and children from Pibor. Pibor Administrative Area Coordinator Peter Ajak says local leaders are trying to prevent youth from carrying out revenge attacks for what happened in February, but admits some youth from Greater Pibor could have carried out the recent attack in Jonglei State.
Even though we say everybody is trying to make revenge, like what happened on that 17 February up to March, in Bibor, Manyabol, and Lekwangole, if Murule also try to make revenge, let us think, if we make revenge up to when? It's better people to create another agenda, like peace. We need the peace among these two communities.
Ajak urged Jonglei and Greater Pibor authorities to work together and find effective ways to end the cycle of violence in the region. While visiting Greater Jonglei a year ago, Vice President Taban Dengai warned governors and other state officials to step up action to prevent intercommunal violence in the area or risk being held responsible for future attacks. President Salva Kiir has yet to appoint governors for the 10 states. He agreed in the formation of the Transitional Unity Government in February. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
South Sudan's Defense Minister Angelina Teny has defied orders to appear before the Legislature Task Force for COVID-19. The minister says the mandate of the current parliament expired with the end of the pre-transitional period in February. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
The dispute between Teny, first Vice President Riek Machar's wife, and Parliament started last week when the country's COVID-19 task force summoned the minister to appear before lawmakers on Monday to answer questions about the role of the military in preventing the spread of the virus. In an April 16 letter seen by South Sudan in Focus, Teny declined to appear before the task force, arguing the mandate of the former government expired 2 months ago with the start of the new transitional government. Under Article 1, Section 4 of the Revitalized Peace Agreement on the Resolution of Conflict in the Republic of South Sudan, Teny wrote, the government is supposed to be replaced by the reconstituted transitional government. Therefore, she argues she cannot appear before the legislature until a reconstituted assembly is formed. Paul Yuane Bonju, chairperson of the Transitional National Legislative Assembly's Information Committee, says there is no government without a national legislature.
You cannot call yourself a government without having the parliament in place. This one will not happen. And this revitalized transitional government comes as a result of the work which is done by the parliament that she is rejecting to come. She is there, sitting there because of the work done by this parliament.
In February, the Transitional National Legislative Assembly incorporated the peace deal into the transitional constitution, paving the way for forming a unity government. Under the agreement, a reconstituted assembly was supposed to be in place by now.
Had it not to be because of this coronavirus or COVID-19 pandemic crisis, I'm sure the office of the president and the presidency in general might have actually completed the rest of the formation of the government, starting from the state governors, going to the expansion and the constitution, the transformation of this parliament, and then down to the state legislatures.
Bonju says the pandemic changed all that. Bonju reiterated that there is no government without a functioning legislative body and insists that Teny will appear before the parliament.
She will one day appear before the chambers of the parliament to answer the queries and to make a presentation even, because her ministry is one of the ministries which are key ministries. If we talk about the revitalized agreement, particularly the security arrangements.
President Salva Kiir dissolved the entire transitional government of national unity, including state governments and legislatures, in February and formed the revitalized government of national unity, but he has yet to appoint governors for the 10 states. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's our show for this Wednesday, when I leave you with the song Tiwi Li Yolo by Honey Frank.
Kande mahal ali, mahal tani nade, kande mahal mahal. Junub Sudani le, bili munas kendi. O Junub Sudani le, bili munas kendi. Atade ni na biga pitap jede malo ya jama. Kuliyom kanyaro, binun nile, sukari janu mafi. Ajad biga suku, kuliyom medita.
Listening to Honey Frank with the song Tiwi Li Yolo. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for listening. Remember to stay at home, wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing and do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Bye.